Here's to the best spring ever in this season's must-have shoes. Find all the styles you need from brands you love at amazing prices right now at DSW. Update your closet with colorful sandals made for sunny days, fresh sneakers perfect for spring looks, and sporty soles ready for new adventures. Whatever you're up to this spring, DSW has the exact right pair for the occasion. Shop must-have spring shoes at your DSW store and DSW.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pets with Belly too, and we're putting it all in a podcast, then we'll send it up into the sky. We're calling it Pogs and Recollection. Come on, little podcast, spread your wings and fly.
I can't believe it, but we're back again for another Parks and Recollection. And by saying I can't believe it, I'm super excited.
Okay, good.
Always, good. As always. I am Jim O'Hare, one of your hosts of this Parks and Recollection podcast. I am the guy who played Jerry Gergich, Gary, Larry, Terry, Jerry, even Barry from Johnny Karate for the diehard fans. Though we haven't, at this point in our podcast, even acknowledged Johnny Karate yet because it hasn't happened.
That's right.
But it will.
Just a very, very long tease.
Very long tease. And speaking of a long tease, how are you, my co-host, and what's your name?
I don't know if I like what's going on, but
I don't either.
I'm going to run with it because we're doing it live, guys.
We're doing it live.
It's Greg, and I'm here with Jim, of course, to talk about our favorite show, Parks and Recreation. Speaking of talk, we have a great chat later on in the episode with none other than Darlene Hunt, who played Pawnee's morality watchdog, Marsha Langman.
She's awesome.
And it's an amazing conversation. It was so fun to talk to her about her time on Parks and how she got there.
She's a pretty brilliant writer and actor all on her own, even separate from Parks. And we get to hear a lot about it.
And I appreciate you saying that about her because I've been just dying for years for you to say even an ounce of something like that to me.
And Greg, you know what? You're right. And I sometimes feel bad. I think, am I a little too hard on Greg? So I'm gonna come up with something right now.
Okay.
Greg, you, sir, seem well hydrated. I think that's good. I think it's impressive. It's something to show your kids. It's good to be hydrated.
Thank you.
So that's what I'm going with. And
God bless you for that. Thank you.
See now, are you feeling better?
No, I actually do appreciate it. It's something I am working on is to drink more water. So I appreciate you seeing it, acknowledging it, and wasting our listeners' time with it.
Yes.
So let's stop doing that. And
please quickly stop doing that.
Let's talk about our episode. We're here to discuss. It is Sex Education. It was written by Alan Yang and directed by Craig Zisk. Originally aired on October 18th, 2012. And Jim will blurb the hell out of it.
With STDs on the rise in Pawnee's senior citizen population, Leslie launches a safe sex initiative to educate the community. But not everyone is a fan of her progressive measures. Meanwhile, Ron takes time to his remote cabin, incredibly remote cabin, for a technology detox. And still working in Washington, D.C., Ben and April question whether or not Congressman Murray is actually a robot.
Right. You know, just a normal C story in the human television show about is this human person a robot?
It happens.
And it almost seems like maybe he was. And we'll talk about that.
Yeah, we will get there because he was amazing.
So our notes for today's episode are great because this is a self-contained episode when you think about it. It's breaking away from the heavily plot-driven stories that we've had of the last three episodes. Especially coming off the last season where we have this long arc of Leslie running for office. And we started up the season trying to follow through on that, the promise of the premise, as they would say. And so we talk about Leslie about to start work. And then she has started. And then she's trying to get a bill into law. And so we focus on this new job and world for her. And in here, it's just this nice little thing. It's like a comedy engine storyline the way we used to have with parks in the early days. And I was thinking a lot about the Pawnee Zoo episode when we watched this, because that was an episode about two male penguins who get together. And it was a way to do a story about gay marriage and a larger social issue.
Yeah.
And here we have another one where we have a classic parks engine of, we are going to do an episode about sex education, and we're going to find the comedy by having it be with a bunch of older people.
And there is lots of comedy when you put that in the mix.
Yes.
Because, you know, a lot of people come up to me and they go, oh, we watch it with my family. And I'm thinking, ooh, this might be a tougher episode to watch with some of the younger ones.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, it's all good to learn, but I don't know what age.
Right. There are moments in this episode, I think, that could make one have a little bit of a giggle and or that awkward chortle kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like when I was young and a Kotex commercial would come on the television, and I just knew it was something to be uncomfortable about. I didn't even know what it was all about. And my mother would start conversations about 100 other things, and she's talking over the volume, the whole thing. Yeah. And I think there's moments of this in this episode where parents would be like, oh, anyway, so what did you do at school today?
Yeah.
But it's all good information.
Well, the premise of this episode was, like we talked about, ripped from the headlines after there were these reported breakouts of sexually transmitted diseases across the nation's senior centers. So this, you know, was really happening. And we have a quote that we pulled from Alan Yang talking in Vulture, where he says, we have been trying to break an episode about safe sex for a while, and we kept trying to do it with teenagers, but really never found an angle. Well, clearly we thinking of the wrong age.
Yes.
And Alan also was talking about how we wanted to reassure viewers that it wasn't going to be a whole new show in season 5, right? Just what we talked about.
That's good, yeah.
Because it sometimes feels like all the characters have a lot of different jobs, and that's constantly happening on our show. And I think it's cool, because you show an evolution of character, but you also want to remind people it's still the Parks and Rec that you've known and loved for
a long
time.
These are the people you love.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about our synopsis then. With chlamydia on the rise amongst Pawnee senior citizens, Leslie enlists Donna, Andy, and Anne to help present a sexual education awareness class at the local senior center. Meanwhile, after slamming his car into a fire hydrant while tweeting, Tom is sentenced to 1 week without screens. And back in Washington, D.C., Ben and April meet Congressman Murray for the first time and find his demeanor oddly robotic.
A little bit robotic.
Oddly robotic.
No, but this episode opens with Tom. And I think it's one of my favorite Tom/Aziz moments in the series. Mm. Because anyone who knows Aziz knows he was a phone guy, text guy, whatever, all the app guy.
Yes, quite often on his phone.
He was quite often on his phone. Okay, so what does Tom say to on those tweets?
Well,
because he's driving a car while this is happening.
Yes, well, we pulled them up at 9:15. He has a tweet, 4 green lights in a row, hashtag blessed. At 9:17, drive faster, Blue Civic. Damn, hot. Hashtag soccer moms.
Damn.
I love this moment where it's at 9:18, gotta pass this lady on the jerk, which he says that's what happened when he was, you know, when he got hit. And then, and then 9:20, just hit a fire hydrant, but I survived. Hashtag unbreakable. Hashtag what's Mr. Glass up to these days? Hashtag why no sequel? And I think Tom would be happy to know that there was a sequel, and it was good.
It
was good.
That's the most important. But here he is saying, everything is alleged, and yet he's tweeted out of his misdeeds.
Yeah. Now, one of my favorite little jokes in this cold open is that the judge, you know, he says, Mr. Haverford, you have a problem keeping your eyes on the road and off your electronic devices. I'm going to tailor a punishment to fit the crime. 1 week without screens, no phone, tablets, computers, television, anything. And Tom says, no, please send me to jail. But what I secretly think is the best joke is that the judge's name is Judge Lanquito, as a reference to Judge Lance Ito. Just the little jokes here and there. Is it funny? I think so.
I think it's, please, any reference to that craziness, I'm on board. Yeah.
When we come back and we see how Tom is dealing with this electronic detox, I love his DIY devices, right? He has his Pinterest corkboard that he is so sad that he can't swipe and tap on them, which is great. He has this iPhone made out of paper. His keyboard is X'd out of tape, and his computer screen is covered with a frowny face that reads, do not use. Now, I'm pretty sure that the iPhone made out of paper was the work of Joe Mandy, a writer.
A writer boy.
Because he would just do little things and things to pass the time. And I think he made one just as like a thing you do to pass the time in the writer's room as you're figuring out story. And there's a moment later in the episode where Ron sees that fake iPhone and says, this is the work of a crazy person, right? Or whatever. Or this great madman or a lunatic. And I think that's almost exactly what Mike Schur said to Joe Mandy. But he saw what Mandy had made. So anyway.
And remember when Tom walks in, he's an hour and a half late for work. And he's apologizing to Ron. And he's late because he didn't have his GPS. He lives 3 miles
from
work that he has gone to every day for years and years.
Right.
But he didn't have his GPS, so he couldn't get there.
But don't you think that's something like, I don't know. Like, for example, I used to know most of my friends' phone numbers. Like, like 20 years ago, whatever. You just knew your number. I just knew their numbers. And now I don't know many people's phone numbers because we have offloaded parts of our brain onto our devices. And there is a thing where the human lexicon is getting smaller. People are knowing fewer words also because we're offloading so much of our brain power onto these devices that I don't know how to get to certain places that I would go to every day. Or I would think, okay, I know how to get there, but maybe today the traffic is bad.
Right.
And so maybe I should do a different directions there to save some time when that wouldn't even have been a thing I would have thought of. Like, oh, I wonder if I can do it a different way to get there faster 20 years ago.
Yeah, I certainly don't know anyone's phone number. When I tried to block you from all my stuff,
go on.
I had trouble getting to your pay. I was like, who is this? It's terrible.
It's interesting. You don't know my phone number, but you know my name well enough to know how to block, which I appreciate, Jim. Thank you.
Yeah, no. And then they make me unblock you because they're like, well, you guys have to be able to communicate.
Right,
and it's a whole
professionally.
Thing.
Professionally,
but I don't play that game. Okay. Jim O'Hare is Jim O'Hare, baby.
And do you, Jim O'Hare, also go to Alta Vista and then type in, please go to yahoo.com like Jerry does? You're that bad?
I'm going to say, I'm not now, but there might have been a day.
There was a time.
There was a time.
Okay, let's get back into it. I feel like Leslie's sex ed planning meeting kind of felt like an old Parks team back together again.
Yeah.
And it felt like the fun of the first season or two, just like this comedy, game where they all get to have a different opinion or all get to play together. Well, not you. Obviously, we see you through the window. You weren't allowed inside.
I was not allowed.
That scene. I'm so sorry.
I wasn't allowed in one of the funniest scenes ever is when they're in the conference room. Talking and Leslie says, let's pretend we're old people with questions for Anne.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant.
Yes.
It was brilliant. The comments, the questions, the responses.
Donna has the line about, is there a lube that you can eat? And I love Andy's joke about, like, is it weird that you get older that your pubic hair grows? And like, no. It's like, well, that's kind of happening to me. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Before we move on, Jim, we should talk about getting that visual of Congressman Murray, our little robot congressperson. Man. He's such a weirdo.
Played by Adam J. Harrington.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, he was perfect.
Yes.
I don't think that's super easy to play.
Yes, yeah,
I think
point.
That's really tough.
Yeah.
And he was perfect. This is a politician. Right. So you got to have the sleaze factor. You got to have the looks factor. And he needs to be a robot.
And charming.
And charming when he turns it on. He's got to have it all. And I really think this guy nailed it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jim, let's keep going so we could see more of this great story. Armed with knowledge, condoms, and a medley of fruit, the ingredients for any great party, Leslie begins her sex ed lecture at the Senior Center. But her presentation is cut short by conservative activists Marcia and Marsha Langman, who claim Leslie is in violation of Pawnee's abstinence-only education law. Meanwhile, seeing the severity of Tom's tech withdrawal, Ron decides to take Tom up to his remote cabin for a device detox.
And in Leslie's behalf, this law is crazy, number one. And you would think it just applied to perhaps teaching children in school. You would never in a million years think you couldn't sit with a group of seniors and discuss whatever the hell you want to discuss because you're adults.
Well, and that's why we had to call that out, right? Because if you don't call that part out, I think people might think that that was the case. So we called that out in the episode where they believe that to be the case, but Chris reminds them that actually the way it's written, it's for any government-led educational experience.
Chris comes running in, and you know him, it's all got to be good news. He doesn't want to give any bad news. And this is wonderful, wonderful. Shut it down.
Right.
Yeah.
But before that happens, when Leslie asks how many seniors are sexually active, almost everyone raises their hand, with one woman claiming to have two partners often at the same time. And we pulled this great quote that Retta had in Vulture, and she said, if I had been tweeting while reading that script, I would have written, Donna's found the nursing home that she's going to be in when shit slows down. That's so funny. She got it. She knows it.
She nails it. And let's face it, Donna's shit is not going to slow down.
Okay.
She's got it going.
First of all, this is just good to know, everybody. But risks of unprotected sex posed by the seniors when they're asked include heart attack, falling in love, and perhaps my favorite line of the entire episode when someone shouts, partner dies on top of you. Which I guess just that is a risk.
It's a risk.
You die with this big weight on top of you.
It happens.
Yeah.
For old time folks who like me who watched The Golden Girls, it happened to Rose. That's how her husband died.
I know.
On top of her.
I know.
So it happens.
Marcia and Marshall Langman, when they come to shut down Leslie's presentation, I love that this game where Marshall clearly has this obsession or crush or whatever you want to call it on Chris when he interrupts Leslie's presentation, and the look that Rob gives too is just like this pleased as punch little energy, you know? It's so funny. He's not even thinking about anything about it. It's just, here's a person smiling at him. He's like, I'll smile back. That's great. Yes, I also feel happy.
And Todd Sherry plays Langman, and he's just so perfect at it. And Todd's a wonderful dude. He's a funny guy. Talk to anybody. Everybody's worked with Todd over the years. He's just that person. And when he looks at Chris with this longing, here he is shutting down this because him and his wife, they have this straight marriage,
right?
Blah, blah, blah. And it's just brilliant.
Well, it's also so funny because he has that same energy. You know, we haven't talked about it, but Anne is wearing a shirt that she got from a dude ranch from her boyfriend. And I love
how she walked in with a cowboy hat.
Right. Yeah. I love how Donna says, what'd she say? It's not my favorite shirt, but it is my least favorite shirt.
Yeah. Anne has a problem with, she takes on other people's personalities.
Right. She adopts these other traits and interests from other people, almost mirroring back to them what their interests
are. Bumble flex with Chris.
Right. Flannels with Andy. Leslie's going to call her out about that later.
Yeah.
But right now she's got this cowboy outfit on. And I love when Marshall Langman walks by and says, girl, you look like if Annie Oakley and Pippi Longstocking had a baby, and I love it.
I love it.
God, if that's also not in the Mount Rushmore of lines from this episode.
Yeah. It's like a hit and run. You know what I mean? Like, oh, girl. Oh.
And it's just a pure joke. And it's great. We already know how we feel about Anne in this outfit. Yes. Right? And he doesn't need to offer, but it's just a really funny moment.
Yeah. And she's getting, you know, called out on this outfit by everybody else. And he's like, I love it. Oh, I love that character.
Well, this episode brings back Marshall Langman. And it also brings back our friend, the great Perd Hapley. Appearing on You Heard with Perd, Marshall dips into conversion therapy territory when describing how to suppress sexual urges, right? And so there's a Perd poll approval rating of abstinence-only education, 89% in favor, 9% against, and 4% don't care at all. And I love how Perd says that 100% of his viewers are perdverts, which is what he calls fans of the show.
Fans of the show. And it's interesting. When these people, when they got this poll, 89% in favor, I don't think they mean adults, right? They're thinking that this is relating to children and in school.
Well, even still, there's a thing where in polling, if you are asking people to vote or call in or click on something, you pretty much only get the people who feel very strongly about it or very against it.
Yeah.
Right. That's why these types of polls are terrible.
Yeah.
And that's not the way you should drive policy in any way.
Exactly.
Because if you feel fine about something, or you kind of like it, or you kind of support it, or let's say you feel you love it, but you just, it's not one of your top issues, are you going to spend the time to answer a question, to go online, to click something?
Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. So they're terrible samples. But in this case, there's being used as a reason to agree, I guess, with this stake that abstinence-only education is the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Jim, for a guy, as you've admitted, who perhaps wasn't as internet literate for a long time.
A dumbass. Go ahead.
How you feeling? I mean, I love this run of scenes with Ron and Tom where Ron wants him to purge all of his thoughts about technology and these things that are overwhelming and just driving his addiction. And he just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, Ron thinks, okay, give him 20 minutes. He'll put this out.
Right.
The day goes on.
Right.
They're fishing. They're canoeing. They're chopping wood.
Talking about emojis. And then there's a sequence about podcasts. And I love what he said. There are a million of them and they're all amazing. And then John Ralphio and he have a podcast called Nacho Average Podcast where they rate different kinds of nachos.
Okay, I'm going to jump in and say that's brilliant.
Honestly, that would kill right now.
It would kill. I would tune in. And who do you have any memory of who came up with that line? That is a great line. Nacho Average Podcast.
I wish I did. I couldn't even begin to guess who that was.
It's a great line.
It's great. And I love how he also says that he starts his day out by checking Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and sometimes he throws in LinkedIn for the professional shorties.
Professional shorties.
Yeah, I wasn't going to do it the way he did it because it's too good.
But it's too good. You're the actor here. I can't even compare.
I'm just a writer, but you're an actor. You
know, I am an actor.
So how do you feel watching that? Did you learn something about the internet and watching that?
Okay, and all these things are still in our world right now, aren't they? I mean, certainly Twitter. Is Tumblr a thing?
I think asking aren't they says that you really didn't learn shit.
I didn't learn shit. Wait, is Tumblr a thing?
Tumblr's still a thing.
Okay, see, so this tells you exactly about where I'm at.
Yeah.
No, but I check Facebook, but that's what old people do, right?
That is what old people
do. We check Facebook, yeah.
Yeah.
So I do that, but I will, you know, if I'll post here and there. I'm not good about it. No.
Let's push on with our synopsis. Disappointed by Leslie's unwillingness to stand up to Pawnee's antiquated laws, Anne confronts her, leading to an argument. But Leslie's hands are tied, and although she wants to do otherwise, she returns to the senior center to promote an abstinence-only agenda. As she reads from the Langman's propaganda pamphlet, a senior in the crowd asks to see the condom demonstration again, causing Leslie to reach her tipping point and throw caution to the wind and condoms into the crowd. And as a guy who had a bar mitzvah and went to plenty of bar mitzvahs, watching her throw these condoms into the crowd reminded me of the end when you, after the Torah portion and everything, everyone throws like these little jelly candies. And they're right now, Jim is looking at me right now, like, I don't know what this is in reference to, but there are plenty of people right now listening who know exactly what I'm talking about. Anyway, that's what took me back to that. But we didn't throw condoms, we threw jelly candies.
Obviously. As Catholics, we just throw the body of Christ.
You do?
Yeah, we just throw it at everybody.
Right. That's smart.
But also the moment when Leslie throws those condoms and they're reaching, they're all grabbing for them, except for the Langmans. It's like they're
dodging acid
being thrown at them.
Condoms! Yeah.
And I'm guessing we can assume they have never consummated their marriage.
Well, there's a great joke that I picked up. I didn't remember picking up the first time I saw this episode, but now when Marshall's doing his song talking about he said he waited for marriage and then some.
And then some, yes.
That joke really does, like, it's disarming. You don't expect, because the joke is, I waited for marriage. That's what happened. And then some. So it really plays into this game we're talking about of Marshall's sexual interests and proclivities.
Yeah. And then you wonder, Marsha, do we think she's gay also? I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't know, but there's a lot going on at the Langman household.
I think there's nothing going on at the Langman house.
You just think a normal snippet of time in the Langman household, just the two of them sitting on a couch, staring into the middle distance, drinking water.
Yes. Yeah.
Room temperature water.
Yeah.
Okay. And writing these great pamphlets.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
You know, there's a great moment in this episode. Again, there are a lot of great moments in it, and there are a lot of great jokes. But one that really got me is And a woman asks, can we see the condom demonstration? Because I don't know where Lou has been. And the guy who plays Lou, this extra, just slightly raises his eyebrows. And it that little joke cracked me up. Yeah. I was dying. This such great, great eye work there.
Yeah. And also, the demonstrations were pretty graphic. And what was Donna doing in her demonstration? What was going on in her hands?
Oh, well.
She had cucumbers. There were banana. I didn't know what she was alluding to because other stuff was happening.
Let's wrap up our synopsis back at Ron's cabin because Tom dupes Ron into letting him borrow his car, which he immediately crashes after taking off to buy a burner phone from Best Buy. Meanwhile, after receiving a formal censure from Mayor Gunderson's office for her stunt at the senior center, Leslie appears on The Final Word with Purd, vowing to fight the abstinence-only law. And finally, in the tag, Ben does a spot-on impression of the robotic Congressman Murray for April as they head out of the office for the day.
Yeah, I think we cannot not speak of the fact that in this episode, we had tension between Leslie and Anne that never generally happens.
Right.
You rarely see tension between the two of them.
Well, what's interesting is you often have, when the A story is driven by some mission of Leslie's, you often have one of our series regulars in the third act have some kind of a, you know, heart-to-heart with her, and they'll talk about something, and they'll... A lot of times Ron. Yeah. You know, we've seen even Tom do it, and Anne. Like, those are the general people who did it. Mark did in season one and two, and then Ben. And usually it's Leslie, this is how you have to see this kind of thing. But it's not built out of conflict between our characters in the same way. And in this case, there is. There's this little bit of calling each other out. And it works in this moment. It's maybe it's a little uncomfortable to see two characters who generally always just want the best for one another. Mm-hmm. And they still want the best for one another here. But the reason I think it's necessary is because Leslie had to be pushed out of her comfort zone, right? And to do perhaps the what she believed to be the right thing in this new job and responsibility that she has. And only Anne could get her to do that. You know, if you've got to be pushed out of your comfort zone, it's going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right?
And that happens between friends. Best of friends have these moments.
This is what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's also great because, as we learn, Leslie has been having a few issues with Anne and watching her succumb to her boyfriend's styles. And so then it leads to a bit of a confrontation.
Right.
Oh, you want to go there? You want to go there? Oh, we'll go there.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's the great moments.
And it allows for Anne to not just be this person waiting to have a moment to give Leslie good advice. She gets her own story that has depth and is worthy of conversation here too. Anne has to say, like, you know, I really do this. I need to put me first. And we needed to do that for storylines still to come.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, we got to remember, Anne is a nurse. That is her training. So she is passionate about this topic.
Right.
I mean, as she should be, she's seeing people coming in.
Jim, it feels like in our synopsis, we've kind of passed over this great C story of Ben and April with our robot, Congressman Murray. And I love how throughout it, April has this take that he's a robot.
From the very beginning.
Right. And, and you know, Ben's like, oh, he's just being, I'm sure he has excuses. And then she convinces him, and he's curious enough to go into his office in that scene to see what he's been staring at for what seems like hours. He's like, there must be a TV in there or something. And there's nothing.
Nothing.
And Ben's intrigued by it. And then there's the scene where they're going to record an ad. And he is so robotic. But the guy who runs the shoot loves the fact that you just know exactly what you get from him.
No surprises.
No surprises. And it's just this little joke storyline that also serves as this treatise, perhaps, on what politics is right now and what you have to do to get ahead and to get votes and to be non-confrontational, say the right thing, but be boring. And that it ends with this little sweet little tag moment, which I loved between April and Ben. I love to see these two, which I think were such great points of comedy conflict in the beginning, to have this thing in common now, to share jokes in common.
And also, and to make April has shown herself to be quite competent.
Yeah.
I mean, she can downplay everything and, I don't like this, I don't like that. I think she does a damn good job.
Right. And he says, like, good work on this thing.
Yes.
And she pretends to be a robot then. And then I like when he pretends to be a robot in the tag and makes her laugh. And there's something about seeing Aubrey, our actress, smile, her genuine smile, not this kind of like, oh, I guess this is kind of funny smile that April will do. That's very satisfying.
I love it. And to give Adam the chops, he nailed the robot impression. And he's exiting the door at one point and he just stops and stares exactly as this guy has been doing the whole time. And that's when you see April give that little like, oh, I love this man.
Yes.
I just, and I don't know. Those are the heartwarming moments that I love. And I think that's what the fans love.
Before we wrap up, Jim, I'd be remiss if I also didn't talk about another great little joke that this episode has that cracked me up, which was Purd talking about perhaps not being allowed inside of a Pier 1 Imports. Yes.
Anymore. You break it, you buy it.
Right, what he said, you know, they say you break it, you buy it. And Leslie says, that doesn't really apply here. And Purd says, tell that to the folks at Pier 1, an establishment I'm no longer allowed inside.
The delivery that Jay gives to that character.
And the Pier 1 reference.
Yes, it's random.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with what they're talking about.
But it's so real and relatable at the time. Now, maybe not now, but at the time in the episode, yes, the experience of a Pier 1 import.
Yeah. And we also can't forget that, you know, when Tom, we're jumping back to the Tom and Ron storyline.
Yes.
But Ron gives him the keys to the car because he's just going to go and get what they need.
Yes.
Ron's going to prep the fire and everything. And he comes back, he crashes his car. He goes to buy a burner phone, which how nuts are you that you have to get a damn burner phone?
Right.
Because you got to get online. Crashes the car. Now, I love what Ron decided was the fix because Tom is sure he's going to get in trouble. Well, you know, Ron, please don't turn me in, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And he says, go and think about it, whatever. And then Ron walks in and puts down this, I don't know, 600-page big auto mechanic book.
Yes.
And said, you're going to read this from beginning to end, and then you're going to help me repair the car that you crashed.
Yeah.
First of all, that would be, for Jim O'Hare, my worst nightmare that could ever happen. The thought of having to read an auto mechanic book.
Yeah, it's dry.
Yikes.
Yeah, but doesn't the thought of doing that with Ron sound great?
Well, yes, because we love Ron.
That's what I want. I want to just do something like that I could learn a lot from someone who's good at it. I could feel like I did something. Maybe I'm not going to become as skilled as they are at that thing. I think that sounds very satisfying. In fact—
But I don't think Tom thinks that's very satisfying.
No.
You might as Greg. I don't think Tom would. And please, just because we all love the Ron character, I'd love to spend the day with Ron Swanson. My God, how great would that be?
But he doesn't want to spend time with you.
No, that's the sad part. I've called. Yeah.
Well, we've reached the end of our episode, but not the end of our podcast, because we need to get some of Jim's crap. It's the crap we didn't get to, but the crap you love, Jim.
We got some crap here, people. One of the funniest talking heads was from Amy, our lovely Leslie. And it's amazing what a few old guys can do with a little bit of charm and a lot of crabs. And then the old man, he has a question during the town hall. What if the banana is soft and mushy and dog legs to the left? Yikes!
Yeah, not great, Bob.
And then they cut to Pratt, who is, his whole body is cringing.
Right.
He still can't believe these people are having sex.
Right.
He thought this was, I don't think he understood what this whole thing was about.
No, he didn't realize. Yeah, he thought it was just like, he didn't think it was actually happening.
Yes, he goes, they're really having sex? And then he does this face of yuck, and then he starts laughing. Because, you know, then he's picturing it.
Right.
That's our Andy. Oh, and then a Purd moment. There are some statistics that I would like to share with you now. And they are numbers.
Yes. Yeah.
Brilliant Purd. Oh, when Marcia says, you know, when she was talking to Leslie and she goes, well, before you know it, we're going to have babies in thong underwear. Is that what you want? Leslie, no, that's not what I want.
Yeah.
Like, yes, that's what's going to happen.
Yes.
Babies in thongs. I thought this was great. During the town hall, when Leslie says to Anne, there's no other option, Anne. Put away your sex toys and play with them on your own time. What a great line. Oh, anyway. So that's some of my crap.
Some of your best crap.
Yeah.
We have an oops moment in today's episode when responding to the fake old people questions, Anne states that you, quote, have to be under 40 to ride this train about herself. However, Anne used to date Chris, and it was stated previously that Chris is in his 40s. So either that was our mistake or just, you know, Chris is so youthful that it's hard to imagine him being that way.
That's exactly what that is.
Yes.
I mean, Rob Lowe, who played Chris. Come on.
Yes. Jim, final thoughts on our episode today?
I think, again, it was a great episode. And one more moment. I know we already did the crap, but this just, I just saw this.
Oh, you saw another piece of crap didn't get flushed?
I saw another piece of crap that is just so funny. When Marcia and Anne are talking and they're, you know, they're trying to get at each other, and Marcia says to Anne, well, maybe not where you're from in Transylvania. Mm. And then Anne, in a flurry of panic, just goes, well, I'm from Michigan. And then she turns to Leslie. Well, I guess that wasn't worth saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just so great. Yeah. Transylvania. I love that. No, this is a great episode. I learned a lot. I learned about STDs that I'd never heard of before, which I guess that's sad for me. Maybe I should have had more fun when I was younger. I don't really know.
Sure.
But, you know, you always learn. A great episode.
Yeah. It's just a to me, this is a classic Parks episode in a later season of Parks.
Yeah.
It's just fun. You know, you have storylines like Ron and Tom, which are just operating on pure character comedy. You know them. You have Leslie's A story with Anne and the others that's operating in the same classic way that the Park stories used to, which is just a very funny problem that perhaps only Leslie can tackle.
Yes.
It's great. It's just, we did it again.
Huge props, of course, to everybody, but I thought Aziz was so funny in this episode, so incredibly funny. Right. His obsession with his gadgets.
Right. Is he your episode MVP?
You know, again, it's so tough because Leslie is such a main character in all the episodes. So, of course, she always is near the top of that list. But on this one, I am going to give it to Tom. He is hitting a Pinterest board hoping something's going to happen.
Yeah.
A fake Pinterest board made out of paper. And he thinks, I'm going to go Aziz Ansari.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, yeah, he has so much comedy. The whole run where it's scene after scene of him talking about the internet.
The opening scene, the cold open and the stand.
No, brilliant. I'm with you. I think so too. And I also just, I love the interaction we get from Ben and April in the episode, camaraderie, if you will say. But yeah, I mean.
And for a guest star, if we have to give a guest star, of course I would say Purd because Purd's always brilliant. But Adam J. Harrington as the senator robot.
Was great.
Really great.
Well, Jim, speaking of MVPs, we have a conversation with another great MVP from today's episode. We sat down with Darlene Hunt, who played Marcia Langman, and yeah, here's what she had to say.
Welcome, Darlene.
Jim, you should do radio. Seriously.
Well, thank you. Good morning, Darlene.
This pretty much is, but can't you just see CMWJIM in the Midwest somewhere?
Yeah, so good.
Good
morning, everybody.
Darlene, you wear many hats as an actor and a writer, a creator. When you think of yourself and you picture which hat you normally wear most, do you see I'm a writer who acts, I'm an actor who writes, or do you see it as a combination of the two?
First of all, I'm grateful to be here. Jim, it's so nice to see you again. And I do wear a few different hats, which because I write and create and so forth, I sort of go through like sometimes years or periods of time where I can't audition as an actress. Mm. And so somehow I managed to like steal away and audition for Parks and Rec the very first time I did. And it ended up being this amazing like blessing because then I would be working on a show. I remember I was shooting a show I created called The Big C.
Oh, yeah.
And they called about a Parks and Rec episode. And I was like, yeah, I'll be available. And I'm like in the makeup chair, but I'm also like getting network notes from Showtime and sort of like feeling a little naughty that I wasn't where I was supposed to be. But it just really meant a lot to me that Parks and Rec kind of allowed me to kind of keep my acting career going.
Darlene, when I was on set one day talking to Nick Offerman, we're just BSing whatever between scenes, and we start talking about different shows we're watching. So The Big C comes up, and I said, oh my God, I'm obsessed, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, well, you know, Darlene created that. I go, what? He goes, yes. Langman created. I was blown away. I had no idea. I thought you were an actress on the show. I had no idea. So yeah, that was really exciting for me.
That's a great sentence. I love the idea. You know, Langman created that.
Character.
Yeah, but that was really cool. That was cool when he told me that.
That's so sweet. Well, you know, Nick and I have a huge history because we did this play together at the Odyssey Theater way back in the day that our friend like directed. It was called Ecstasy. And then he and I just had this one pivotal scene where we just come in, he's there talking to somebody for 30 seconds. And then I come in as his like girlfriend who's pissed at because he's cheating on me. And we just get into big physical altercation. I slap him across the face. Whoa. And then we just fight our way off the set. And then we would just go to the bar around the corner and drink until the show was over and then come do curtain call.
Ah, that's perfect.
Like one thing. That's great. Yeah. So then I was reunited with him on Parks and Rec, and that was really special.
Yeah, he is a big fan of yours. That is for sure.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
You know, you're on 6 episodes of Parks and Rec. I think it's just worth refreshing. You start in Pawnee Zoo, and then we see Marsha again during Time Capsule, Jerry's Painting, Sex Education, Are You Better Off, and then Pie Mary at the very end of the series. But I think of that first episode, Pawnee Zoo, and I remember, you know, it was a tough episode. It was the first one of the second season. It's kind of this relaunch away of Parks and Rec after the first 6 episodes. We got a sense of what's working, what's not working. I think it was a tough nut to crack. And I think having someone who had your chops to come in to not just be this great actor who can bring something to it, but a writer who can also understand the evolution of story in a different way and the nuance of nailing, I think, a tougher story. I think it was quite helpful in the role that you have as Marsha Langman on the show to have your expertise as a writer as well. And I'm curious if that came to you at all when you were playing this part, if you would draw from some of your other experience as a writer.
You were too kind. And I didn't at all. And I'll tell you why, though. Oftentimes, I will, if I'm an actor on another set, I'll be secretly kind of rewriting lines a little bit, or I'll be like kind of like trying to punch it up. And then I'll be like, is this an appropriate place? Are they open to that? Can I like suggest something to them? Or maybe I'll just like say it, you know, when they yell action and see if mine gets a laugh or whatever. So that's a sneaky thing that I do because I have the writer brain and the writer mind. And I did not do any of that on Parks and Rec because the writing is so good. Mm. And I just felt like, wow, how lucky am I that I just got to like, sort of like just put this cloak on as this character. And it's so fun playing a nemesis. And I just have such just like staring at Amy. We were always sort of like cut with us, like sort of like the stare, like our stare off of like, I'm digging in on my point of view and I'm digging in on my point of view.
Do you have a favorite episode or scene you did from your time on the show? Is there a moment that sticks out as, you know, Mount Rushmore moment for you from Parks and Rec?
Well, that Penguin episode, that was such sort of an impactful episode. That's one that really sticks with people and that's the one they want to talk about. But then as far as being in sort of the art episode.
Oh, sure. Painting. Yes.
The painting.
Yeah. Oh. There's a scene where Amy is like running off with the painting at the end and we're just standing outside and I'm like, no, come back with that. And I don't know what it was. There was just something about our connection where I'm like, don't you do that. She's like, oh, well, I'm going to do that. it's just fun to play off of her. Mm. It's those clear demarcations when you sort of play the villain. Mm. But I always would kind of look at it from a writer perspective and be like, there's just nothing. You can't punch this. You can't make it better. It's just so everything was so like eloquent and perfect and the rhythm of the show. was always so consistent, and the characters, everybody was just put in their own special box with all their rules and toys to play with. And I just thought it was so well done. So it was always such like a little vacation for me, where I got to like get off the plane and come into like Wonderland, where it was just a well-oiled machine. Everybody was always so warm and so nice, and everybody knew their roles and treated you like a regular, which is just, as a guest star, just super fun when you get to feel like everybody, you're one of them.
The thing about the show is, and it happens, you know, with actors, some shows are told you cannot change any lines, and that's scary. But the thing about Parks is, so many people will say to us as the actors, wow, we hear you got to improv. How much of that was improv? And yes, we did get to play every scene. We got to do a fun run and have fun afterward. But the scripts were so strong that generally what was on that paper is what was in the episode, because it was so strong. Not that things didn't make it here and there, which is so much fun when you get to do that. And I also love that you say you felt like you were, you know, one of us when you were there, because we've all been on sets where it's not that feeling. And it can be tough. You know, you're walking into a group of people who have their own, you know, clicks and things going on. And I think every one of us went out of our way to make sure every guest felt as comfortable as possible. And I love that. I just think that's how every show should be.
You did, Jim. And that is a big deal. And the writers too, Greg, there was so much warmth there. But also my first, I think it was the Penguin episode, though. I had a scene with Rob Lowe, and I was like, oh my God, just with his pedigree. And he was so nice and so professional. And he had so many lines to like get out. Plus he was like doing, you know, unlike me, he had two scenes there or whatever. He had so many. And that just really stuck with me, that whole interaction and the working. And he was just a really nice, good robot. We just like, pew, came in, pew, pew, pew.
Sure.
Sometimes if we were doing a scene with Rob and we messed up our lines, we would say, oh, I'm sorry, I looked into his eyes. And then I was gone. I had no recollection of lines or anything else. Yeah, that whole face of his. God bless him.
But really warm.
Well, it's funny. You talk about playing a nemesis and how fun that was. And I'm curious, what kind of feedback would you get from people playing this type of part? And would anybody come up to you? And what was the effect like in the real world?
In the real world, I get recognized all the time, which is also funny because I don't, you know, I have curly hair and whatever, but like in the valet line and the like all kinds of places. And it is a really big kick for my kids. It is a huge badge of honor for them. And what I will say, even looking back over these episodes, I mean, I wasn't in it a ton. You know what I mean? Like such a small part of the show. So the fact
But you know how it is. If a character is memorable, it doesn't matter how many episodes you were in. That has nothing to do with it.
But also, again, kudos to the writers, because you guys had so many wonderful guest stars who stood out. Like the porn star is one of my favorites. I'm like, who is she? She is so good. Sure.
Brandy Mass.
She is so good. And so you made everybody, like, you gave them their moment to shine and really made them stand out. But my kids like really appreciate it. And like their friends, when they find out I'm Marsha Langman from the show, it's a big deal. So that's fun.
And Darlene, did you know Todd Sherry ahead of time, who played your husband on the show?
You know, I was hoping you would mention him. No, I didn't know him ahead of time, but like when we met, and that was fun because the first episode I did, you know, it's like you get to evolve as your character. And then I show up for the second one. It's like, here's my husband. I have a husband. And I was thinking about that. I was like, oh, did Todd and I know each other before? No, I also have a terrible memory. So if you have him on, he'll be like, oh yeah, no.
We lived together for 5 years.
Exactly. No, but we met there, but we were just like, oh, obviously this is hilarious. This is awesome. And we like spent the day in the trailer together and we're instant fast friends. So
now, do you think, as the character Marsha, what do you think was Marshall's situation?
I think we probably slept in separate twin beds, like in I Love Lucy.
I Love Lucy. Dick Van Dyke. Yes. But do you think Marsha thought Marshall was gay?
No. Nope.
Yeah, I agree with that because it would really go against, you know, your prudish thoughts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense.
I think maybe he went to some camp as a teenager.
Yes,
yeah.
I think so
yeah.
too.
And they both feel like it worked.
Yeah. The conversion worked. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The chemistry is amazing, I think, between the two of you on screen. You're right. It adds this great depth to a character. Like, you think you know who Marsha Langman is. You've seen her do her thing a few times. And now here she has a husband and it's unexpected. And the more you get to see and know these people, it's fun to add layers to them. And that, I think, was the fun of bringing people and actors like you back, is that you get to just add this richness to the world.
And, you know, I was thinking about the whole nemesis because you know, at first, when it was that first episode had aired and people were like, are you like Marsha Langman? I was like, ha, ha, ha. Like, of course not. But then the more I think about it, I was like, you know what? In so many ways. Like, I am such a prude. Like, I'm just such a prude. Like, I just am. Like, even as a writer, like, I don't write the sex scenes. I just can't write sex scenes. I'm just not. They make me feel icky. Like, I can't do them. So you do the sex scenes. Like, so I was sort of laughing as I was, you know, reviewing this episode. And I was like, you know, I am kind of like I do have a stick up my butt occasionally. So anyway, I do think I have a little Marsha in me. And Todd has a little Marshall in him, I think.
It's been so fun doing this podcast and getting to talk with people from every corner of the world of Parks and Rec, and to have Marsha Langman, Darlene Hunt finally in the studio.
It's just a blast.
So thank you so much.
I'm so grateful to you guys. Keep doing like lots of wonderful creative work. And I'm a fan and I appreciate it.
Parks and Recollection is produced by me, Lisa Berm, and engineered by Joanna Samuel. The podcast is executive produced by Jeff Ross, Adam Sachs, Colin Anderson, and Nick Liao. Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn are our talent bookers, along with assistance from Maddie Ogden. Our theme song is by Mouse Rat, aka Mark Rivers, with additional tracks composed by John Danick. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Parks and Recollection.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Imagine you're at an exclusive party. Across the crowded room, you spot the most stunning man. You spit take your champagne. He keeps approaching, and then he says,
"Your red light therapy session is now complete."
What just happened? You found your escape at Palm Beach Tan. Break from the chaos at a Palm Beach Tan near you and leave rejuvenated. Take time for yourself at Palm Beach Tan and take that feeling with you wherever you go. New red light therapy now available, featuring Australian Gold, hot guy not included.